Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League with Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
On the radio.
30. I'm on right now. I don't believe you.
You boys are live.
What's his name? Jared Karavis is like DraftKings guy. They'll have the Jared Karavis parlay, and it's like, I will never.
But Kevin Hart told me.
Kevin Hart told me this is easy.
Somebody get Ja Rule on the phone.
Where's my money? What's Ja?
Where's Ja?
Where's Ja?
Okay. Not to go too crazy into like the, but like, is there anything else just quickly? Because, okay, Nerfy, no run first inning stuff.
Yeah.
But is there any other type of bet it could be? You know, maybe you're not playing money line. I mean, is there just anything?
In fact, I preach a pretty open approach. Okay. And I would even say to parlays, I've been having this discussion with some really professional sharps behind the scenes. I'm trying to figure out a way to have it presented where it might help people. But I have even argued that there's a place for parlaying in responsible betting. I knew, again, you guys were kind of talking about this, but if you just have a process, you shouldn't let other people tell you what to do. So I had a friend of mine that knew he could afford $5 a day, and he would bet a four-leg parlay every single day, looking to basically go 10 to 1. And in his mind, this was what he would do at work Monday through Friday. The idea being he'd have to hit one parlay every 2 weeks to basically break even to make a little bit of money. Dude, that's how you – listen, that's fun. Again, this is a recreational element.
That's fine. You're stretching your money and you're having fun doing it. Like, there's different levels of gambling too.
Yeah, you're right. We're also getting this very like gatekeeping stuff shirt, these old bettors. Wow. I'm a professional bettor, and if you're not betting and making $1 million and getting every bit of edge – dude.
Twitter might as well just be called the gate.
You ever go on a roller coaster? You ever go to an amusement park and leave it more money than when you left, or a baseball stadium? No. Entertainment costs money. And right. People understand that there's a gate fee. Now, if you're helping them in a responsible way, there's nothing wrong. I'm telling you, I've been having this fight. There's been a big one going on because there's quite a lot of that. You know, oh, anybody that gives content is a terrible bettor and an idiot and shouldn't be allowed to talk about this stuff. You see it.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's really, I thought it's you were frustrating. Still going. So I've been trying to step into that void of being the opposite, although granted, I bet at a high level compared to like a square. But I'm not betting at high levels like I was when I was betting professionally. I don't think I would be able to do content and bet at that level. It's very difficult.
All right, let's do one more thing that's very gambling-centric and then one that's going to twine us back into the fantasy realm. Is what has been your best attack if you had to pick a prop bet that you're going with? You talk about total bases. Total bases can be fun. I have struggled my ass off with total bases, even though it's so funny is I do all this like work around home run calls daily on Fantasy Pros. And then I like to like take my home run call and put it into a total base play. I think that's a way that you can approach that. Total bases, I have personally struggled with this year. I've done okay and decent with strikeout props. If I think the prop market is the gateway, not gatekeeper, but the gateway for fantasy to intertwine more into gambling. Obviously Underdog, Price Picks, those guys, they have opened up those gates and people are doing it because it's more of a prop market. So what I'm getting at is if you had to attack one in the prop market, is it the simple total base versus K's? Would you get into earned runs for pitchers? Give me your best attack prop that you are in on right now.
It's pitching unders with plus money attached.
You know, pitching under what? Strikeouts or you're playing innings?
What? Generally, when pitching props, right, we're talking strikes and strikeouts and walks. I really like to go under strikeouts on contact pitchers, especially ones I think are going to get mauled. Remember, every pitcher gets a line posted. So when Jordan Lyles goes to St. Louis or whatever, or, you know, you name contact pitcher guy that's not any good, a lot of times these guys don't make it long enough to get out of it. You know, like, and again, you know, I put up these tools on my sheet so people could see it all at once. One of the things I've been using that's very, very helpful, I don't know if you saw Zimmerman covered this at Fangraphs. So this is fantasy stuff also. Using ball percentage, it's way more effective than walk percentage.
Okay. Right, balls think, versus strikes.
About it, yeah, just how many, what percent of the pitches you throw are out of the zone? Interesting, simple stat that we don't really look at often. Everybody knows walk rate. You'd be surprised. A couple guys out there floating around with decent walk rates, but very high ball rates that will maybe lead you to some edge in these markets. That's what I've been doing. Also,
do you recall who those guys are? I'd be very curious.
I can look at today's again. I have all this stuff up every single day. It's just, I'm just such a, I don't know. You know what? Again, it started from me feeling bad about if people lost. So, all right, here's an example. Today, these are today's starters just because I run it every day. Yeah, so, okay. A guy like, Jordan Lyles is a perfect example. So Jordan Lyles, he's a perfect example. Because he has a low strikeout rate, right? He has a low swing and miss. He has a very low whiff rate. He has a 38% ball rate, but only an 8% walk rate, but also a 90% zone contact rate.
Working on the edge, he's painting.
Those are kind of guys that you could look, you know, to go on. I did it with Tommy Henry. I think I hit both ends of it yesterday. I went over the walks and under the strikeouts, right? So I found the contact pitcher I wasn't buying, right? Yeah, I'm not buying what he's selling.
Welsh and I either. We were talking about it all day yesterday.
Yeah, we went over 1.5 walks. That walk prop was really low. Books are this is almost like an F5 thing, Welsh. They are reticent to put a 2. They don't want to put a flat 2 because they don't want to push. So they just put 1.5 and juice it. But now some people are preparing them and stuff, or some people just paying that 145, 150, which if you have to, you do it. So there are clues to that. And again, I like under, you know, give me under Bieber strikeouts. Give me under Wainwright strikeouts. Just give me under Michaelis strikeouts. You know what
is
I mean?
Is there any on that list that was a higher, because you were kind of alluding to this, like maybe a lower walk guy with a higher ball rate that's like a bigger name? Does that make sense how I'm saying that?
Well, I know, today's.
And today's not a great slate of like starting pitchers to put out there, but plug.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old...
In this league.
Talk about www.com, me, you made you go click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
I don't know what you're saying, but that's what's going on, yeah.
Yeah, I think Lyles was the biggest disparity. Cabrera's numbers kind of line up. Yeah, today's a bit weird. Yeah, it's really just Lyles. Even Corbin Burns has a 38% walk rate, 38% ball. And his walk rate's at 9. Oh, Tanner Bibee is actually a really good one. Bibee's ball rate's up at 37.5, which is not good. And his walk rate's only 6.
What would be the average ball rate?
Oh, yeah, let me check it out. Hold on, I have it. It's probably like 36.
I was going to say 35.
It's right there. It is. It's 35, 36. But it's one of those numbers that everyone matters a lot. Like, when, you know, once you get to 33 or below, elite control. Once you're at 40 or above, look for those walk prop. Like those are, you know, again, I'm kind of showing some of my procedure. Well, that's okay. I don't mind. I'm all about that. But if people are interested, check out the sheet. Let me know. It's funny. I joke about my show. It's a little arrogant, but I always say my show is like the restaurant where the chefs eat. You know, it's not like that. It's not that crowded, but the people there are like ferocious and into it. They're industry. You know what I mean? Like they're really driven by the work. So like, I know it's kind of a little bit nerdy, but that's kind of how I'm finding it.
You're going to have an arrogant saying, at least make it interesting, John. That's what I say. And I like that one. It's where the chefs eat. So, good one.
And it's funny. It's true. I got a lot of like command. My show, the chat room was all, they're progenitors. They're people that do work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They don't tell me either. I like that.
What's interesting about all of this is it leads to like what I was talking about where, you know, there's a lot of like gambling process that can lead to your fantasy analysis of, if you're playing DFS or if you're really thinking about short-term stuff like, you know, two-star pitchers and whatnot. And maybe back to your point, something I tend to do is like, I'll hone in on someone like I'm not about, and I'll look at what all the bets look like. What do the walks look like? What do the strikeouts look like? Earned runs. The other day, by the way, it was one of my best calls, I feel like, in a while. Alek Manoah's 2.5 earned runs was plus money the other day, and he got through 1/3 of an inning. Like, focusing on a pitcher that you want to attack and finding what the bets are, that might be something. But all of this work you do clearly has a symbiotic relationship with fantasy. So what I'm curious about is all of this betting work, what has it done as far as fantasy has gone on players that you started to get more excited about? Yeah, I saw you had a thread about Ben Lively the other day, because this is going to lead to great streamers. So really what this is who are some guys that might be underrated in the fantasy community that have popped up for you in all of your betting research?
Okay, right. So betting has really, it's made me a much better fantasy player. And again, I'm very honest. I started as a point league guy because I was a better and a point league guy. And getting into Roto is just not the same, right? Because it's a game with rules that are not, like, to understand how to balance steals and average. It's difficult. It's very difficult, especially NFBC. People are hyper-focused on this stuff. So I would admit betting doesn't help as much with the hitting side. It's tremendously helpful with the pitching side, right? Because I'm popping the hood, expected stats on everybody every day. Again, not to keep pumping the sheet, but I put out the sheet because it was my work. It's what I used when I got into the business. And now I kind of refined it for the public. And, you know, it's compartmentalized stuff to help you understand what a pitcher looks like. And for me, I understand I talk really fast. I think really fast. So I have to slow my work down, which is why if you look at it, it's all very OCD style, you know, organized. But it's going to help you find the underlying stuff. I mean, it's too bad. I think he hit the IL, but a guy I was really big on was Alex Fado for Detroit. You know, a guy that 99% of people are overlooking, right? But he had a ton of really cool underlying stats that I liked, and I back him. Same for Ben Lively, and you kind of pick your spots. So it's very helpful for pitching. Also, you know, I was really high on Braxton Garrett, and I was laughing when people range dropped him. Listen, that's not his fault he gave up 11 runs. That's the coaches. That's the manager. You know what I mean? Listen, dude, you got to pull guys after 7 or 8. That's just demoralizing.
I mean, after 7 or 8?
Yeah, come on, it's the end, right? That's the end. How did you go? You can't hit a 5-run homer, so you can't go from 4 to 9. Multiple things are happening. You're letting the guy get his ass ringed. That's not fair. It wasn't fair to him. But he was very good. So a lot of times that's what you're going to find is pitchers on the upswing. But the most helpful thing that I think for betting, and this is – hasn't bled out into the fantasy community. I've been talking to Nando. We've got to try and make this a way that we can help people is to understand how to avoid which teams to stream against. I'm telling you, it's chronic malpractice in fantasy circles to just go by the jersey. Oakland A's, good matchup. Roll out Rhodesy. Washington, people still go on podcasts and talk about the Nationals as an easy matchup. Well, he's got Washington, dude. Do you not look, like, you don't look at, you don't even look at stats. People see, that's the thing, my blind spot for individual hitters in fantasy is the fantasy player's blind spot for the team context as a whole. And this one I stole from Alex Chamberlain, thinking about teams in terms of, like, sine waves, right? Even the worst team is going to peak up. And, you know, now a good team has a fatter wave up top and a lower wave at the bottom. Maybe it's flatter. But even the worst team is going to wave up. And it's our job to kind of identify that. Hold on, I got a good one. I've got some good stuff. Again, this is all the sheet. I have team stats, split year-to-date, last 500 plate appearances. And Washington, I know, always pops. And I heard it just today. So Washington right now, it might be one of the last places that I want to go stream, guys. Washington is number one in K rate, last 500 plate appearances, 16% K rate. Number 3 in zone contact, top 5 in batting average, top 5 in OBP, top 8 in OPS. Top 5 in team WOBA, top 8.
This is for the year or recently?
No, this is last. Again, remember, this is where the moving average is.
Yeah, sure.
The idea being, and this is where I've been arguing with some of the data scientists about how hot. Think about, people look at last 7. It's not about the last 7 or the last 14. It's about how the last 7 and the last 14 engage with each other. Meaning, let's take a single player just because people understand the numbers better. Let's say we have 1,000 OPS, right, last 2 weeks. Let's say you have 800 OPS the last week. you might have started out and said, well, 800 OPS is what I consider hot, right? It's a good hitter. But an 800 OPS coming off of a higher wave is maybe an indication of a downtrend.
Sure, sure.
Where people are trying to quantify hot and streaks. One size fits all. It doesn't work that way. Everybody's different, right? You and I are going to have different waves. The same way different teams have different waves. That's just how it has to be understood. So I present these things in with different time frames. The team stats formatted in different time frames. They give you an idea of who to avoid. That's why I put out implied team totals. And it messes people up. They're like, you know, you have Washington. You have Detroit in the top five this week. There are times where Detroit implies a top five offense. I know it's very hard for people to understand, right? You know, because we just kind of have this.
John is just crapping on the D-backs here. We play the Nationals and then the Tigers. So he's just saying, look, you should win these games, but don't be disappointed when the Tigers and Nationals. No, I'm just kidding.
Arizona was such a letdown because they were looking like they were on the verge of waving up. Like you could feel it going. And it was right around the McCarthy call up. And you thought they were going to kind of go. And they really went in the tank lately, which is surprising because a lot of the disciplinary metrics are in place for them. But they're like a ground ball machine. They had 47% ground ball rate as a team. 500 plate appearances.
Nice. Yeah, that's a brutal one. Let's talk a little fantasy here, and I want to know because Welsh got into this today with Pisapia on leading off, and it's grave dancing. And your thoughts about it with Jacob deGrom going down, having Tommy John surgery.
Wasn't grave dance. Let's not call it grave.
I mean, Joe was doing like the Macarena on the.
No. We've got to clarify that because he definitely would argue against it. Wasn't grave dancing. It was a version of of I told you so with what I firmly disagreed with that. The shaming of the community that promoted where he was being drafting. Those were he wasn't like, hey, look at him. He's injured. Ha ha. It was like more like, hey, listen, I never liked him there. But the part that we got into it about was the community.
No one should have been recommending him. Right.
Shame on the fantasy community for having him where he was. And I firmly disagreed with that.
Well, let's just talk about this instance in terms of risk going into the season and stuff, John. Was Jacob deGrom? We know the answer now is no, obviously. But a guy that is the number one pitcher, we were talking about him with Derek Cardi going into the season. And Cardi was talking about how he's worth like a first and a third round guy if he pitches over 100.
Yeah.
It's insane the value that a guy like that has.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. After that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Would you
be a good sport and indulge us and just tell us a little more? Let me tell you something about
In This League.
You know, obviously now we know the risk wasn't worth it, but is it a risk that you saw and thought this is worth taking because of the upside with DeGrom going into the season? Or is there like, do you live by an overall general rule of I'm not going into the season with players that are injury prone or, you know, maybe already hurt like he was late going into the season? Just your overall thoughts on this whole situation and how it developed.
DeGrom came in with an elevated risk. I understand.
Right.
That being said, nobody knows anything about injury prediction. It's so ridiculous. Just stop it. Okay, you do not know if he was going to go 41 innings, 122 innings, 142 innings. Nobody knows. So that is so patently absurd. That's the part that's patently absurd, is people saying they knew when it was going to happen. The thinking is, if this guy goes, and it's funny, what did you even need from DeGrom? 80 innings? And people go, what do you mean 80 innings? You get replacement value. Look what Strider did at 130. So if you would even just say Jacob deGrom is a little better than Spencer Strider, that sounds fair. Yeah. That if he gave you, you know, first of all, his 80 innings, like he says, 120 from a regular pitcher, pretty much.
Right.
It's everything. So, no, it was not wrong to be recommending it. I had a hard time with deGrom in, let's say, shallow bench leagues. If you have an IL spot, fire him up, man, because nobody knows, again, nobody knows anything. Fire him up. I also like them in best ball leagues where you're playing for like a big overall and you get spike consideration. Part of my thinking was maybe he'll come back during the playoffs at some point. Now, again, right. You know, we drafted in the spring. I obviously, he's on the shelf now. But yeah. So, no, there were multiple pathways to have him pay off where he was going.
Well, and let me add the thing, again, the context of this is like Joe's argument was about where he got drafted. Not that Joe said he had him at like SP20, so he was just far out. He didn't live that kind of like where the upside is. Because my argument with DeGrom has been like, what's not debatable with Jacob DeGrom is when he pitches, he's the best. Like, there's no other player that's like that, regardless of what injury proneness over the years of the Buxtons and the Stantons and whatever. Like, everyone is like, oh, hey, if Buxton is healthy, he's pretty good. But it's not like DeGrom where he's the best. Right. He is almost inarguably the best pitcher. He had an elevated point of risk. But to defend Joe in this, it's that his main point was him going off as SP5 was the wrong take. In hindsight, it's 100% correct.
Sure.
But
what was he projecting him for? That's what
he had him as a top 20. He had him at SP20.
I think he only projected him for 75 innings, you're saying?
Yeah, I think that it's probably something closer to that. So it's not that like DeGrom you could not draft. It was that the community pushed him up too high, which there's a level of correctness to that. Where it stopped in my mind was when he had that first injury in spring. We were like, oh, okay. God, this is all he got. So he got back down. Like I had him at like SP5 in like January or something. And then I pushed him back to like SP8 or 9 or something like that. Yeah. Once the injury happened, because the risk was out there. So I guess what it is, and it's so funny because, again, I argued with Joe about this, but I'm kind of defending there. You're right. The least predictive element is probably injuries than anything. But there is an element of like projections. Projections are not the be all end all. It is just a mathematical system that is telling us the averages of highs and lows. There is something to that to say that though there's not an equation, injury history, though it is not a predictor for future injury, does kind of create a projection system of like what's going to be missed. And I think that's
well, the
what
trope too,
he
Welsh,
fell hard that, into.
And the trope, right, the trope about the injuries is the best indicator of future injury is past injury. That's You know, that's the whole thing. So yes, he is a risk coming into the year. Everyone knew that. He's a calculated risk. It did not pay off. But there are times, you know, we were talking about this before the show started, John. You know, Masahiro Tanaka. Welsh and I were talking about this. Tanaka, for 3 years, was going to have Tommy John surgery. Right.
He
was
good after that.
Right, yeah. And so, you know, for 3 years, he was going to have it. It finally did break, right? But it was like, if you were avoiding him, obviously he wasn't at the same level as Jacob DeGrom. I'm not trying to argue that. But if you were avoiding him, you missed 3 years of production out of Tanaka before it finally
did get hurt.
Same thing with Chris Sale. Everyone said, oh, the way Chris Sale delivers the ball, blah, 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 he's going to be hurt. It wasn't until 2 years ago that he got hurt throughout his whole career, really. So
I would
now
almost relent.
You know,
I would kind of relent to what you guys, what we're saying here, too. If DeGrom, like you know, when he had the injury in spring and stuff, and then he came back and he just didn't look good, I would have fallen into that, but he did. He looked amazing. He was still the guy. Like, the injury still didn't change the production. So there's a fantasy question to this. And let me ask this. Do you think we should be a little bit more accepting of prior injuries for the future? Should we, or do you think this is just a nothing burger in the pantheon of like, hey, listen, it did happen. You know, I was wrong. Other people that faded him were right. Do you think this is something that we build into the collection and say, hey, we really should pay attention?
What do we learn?
Maybe a couple more notches for massive injury prone players like Buxton. Jazz Chisholm, I think, is one of those players. So it's really a yay or nay. And what does this do for your analysis?
I mean, what you can do. What you can do is be more aggressive in your playing time projections. That's the only thing you do. And that'd be the only thing to the whole Joe thing that I would say is, he's not wrong for pushing him back to a point that he didn't want to take a guy with that sort of elevated risk. It's also objectively not absurd for him to go where he was if you were projecting. I mean, who had him projected for less than 100 innings? No one was doing that. So with 100 inning projection, we're in a projection.
I'm sitting here like, I see I might have been a little Pollyanna here, now, guys. I might have been a little Pollyanna.
But if I'm saying, if you look at any of the any of the providers, right? They all put the $130 on him, a $135 on him. And those, and again, this is almost like this goes to the projection argument, because whether or not you use projections, like I don't really use projections, but you have to understand that people do use them and they're going to drive the market. So people are going to put that number in a calculator and it's going to tell them where
like
he has
Byron
to be.
Like Byron Buxton getting over 100 games played when he hasn't done it since 1989 or whatever.
So listen, that would be the answer, is for somebody to say that, like, that's it, I've had enough, I'm going to be really, really aggressive in dinging injured players with track records of injuries for playing time. And that will do all the work for you. That's all you have to do. You don't have to say that Buxton isn't good. And you don't have to say that DeGrom isn't good. You have to say, you know what? I'm not putting the 95 innings anymore. I'm putting 35 innings. And that'll knock him down to where he's at. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that's what it was. And what's crazy about it, too, is, you know, there's a lot of argument to say, like, okay, well, this guy could get hurt, but any guy can get hurt. The thing is right. like every damn player that we would have put injury-prone tags on has gotten hurt this year. I said I was down on Luis Robert and Tim Anderson because of it. Guess what? Both have missed time. Buxton, rib contusion. DeGrom, out for the season.
Say Mason Miller, and there's going to smoke is going to come out of my ears right now. I had to post a meme of the actually with the guy with the glasses and the buck teeth. Actually. Because the journal Mason Miller only had 28 innings pitched. You didn't know. I love this. Nobody knows. Yes, I signed up. No, I didn't blow my brains out for $400 a fab. But yes, I was aggressive on him because he's ridiculously good. And I hope for 64 innings. I hope for 39 innings. No, I got 7, okay? And I lost. But I love that. People are like, see, I told you. The same people told you. He's never going to go 5 innings. He went 5, he went 6, he went 7. Oh, those people then all of a sudden were like, oh. They had to clamber onto something. Right? They had to sink their teeth to something. And then, of course, I got hurt. I was so upset. Because I was building my case as to why those people were awful, you know, because they're trying to predict the timing. Yes, certain players have higher elevated risks, but we don't know the timing. Jacob DeGrom could have easily, meaning, let's see what it popped into me in the preseason and said, Jacob DeGrom's going to need Tommy John. Okay. What if it would have happened in the wild card game? Every right. fantasy manager who drafted him won their league, dude, running away in a year without pitching. If you had, you imagine getting 175 innings of DeGrom, 235 strikeouts, 1.87 ERA, 0.67 whip. You won your league. And those people didn't know squad douche. Yes, he got hurt in the wild card game. Yes, he needed Tommy John. Were they dancing? No, they're not dancing because the timing was wrong.
So it was a gold rush. He's the gold rush here. I actually think there might be a little bit more attention paid to, like, myself as I sat there and was, like, down talking Tim Anderson and Luis Robert, knowing they get hurt, and they did, and to degrees excusing some of the players that I think have high talent levels, but I also, I'm relatively reasonable.
Yeah, hypocrite.
But I'm relatively reasonable. Yeah, hypocrite. I don't have shares of DeGrom, by the way.
I don't have Buxton, though. How many Buxton shares do you have?
I do have some Buxton.
Come on.
But Buxton was going outside the top 100.
Dude. We're all looking for upside. That's the thing, is that if you were drafting Jacob DeGrom, you were looking for the upside. It's tough to draft a guy that high because it's not really about him missing time. It's about who you're skipping. Who are you passing on? To take this guy that might miss time. Well, so like the later it gets, the more likely you are to invest in a sketchy guy in terms of injury history. The thing with DeGrom is that he was the highest one off the board because of his upside. And that's why people are so mad about him.
Hindsight is like the hitter that you passed on DeGrom. And then the next round when you could have taken Kevin Gausman, like that's right. what hurts in the hindsight of the safe plays and stuff like that. Yeah. I just think all of it, it's just an interesting look into the way to process injuries. And it's another feather in the cap of like not chasing insane upside that is tagged by injury, not versus the high upside of players that are unproven. And that leads us to the final thing. Ellie De La Cruz speaking up. There's no bigger upside bat, but there is an unprovenness. There's also an element of strikeouts that are scary here. I would love to get the whole, you know, Derek Carty from 3 years ago, Fernando Tatis debate going again. If we had it preseason, we don't. But, you know, there are some risks, some fears. I'm curious at your take.
Try a free sample of Berry Pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, will this send me spiraling out of my routine?
time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
What? Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning, right? Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pi is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again?
Fruit ruins
never
insulin
eat after 7 p.m.
One cheat day.
Cut carbs. Fast for 48 hours.
Stop it! They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
2 ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
I'm very vocal about that. I think Ellie is a slam dunk top 10 SP rest of season. I'm pushing a more 8 or 7. I think
SP,
you're going to see.
Shortstop.
I'm sorry, yeah. Shortstop. I think he's going to probably push 10 to 2015 home run stolen bases. I think it's going to mirror what we've seen in Fernando Tatis in the past, but he does have some warning signs of strikeout numbers. So, I mean, what is your focus and what is your outlook on Ellie the rest of the season? Hard hit versus strikeout concerns. What do you think?
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League. More spoon. Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
Hey, here right now. Leave a message or whatever. Podcast listeners leaving messages stupid.
Voicemails in this league at gmail.com. That is where you can send your voice. 60 seconds or less. Animals. Record yourself with anything. You could praise us. You could say how handsome Scott is. You could say you love my hair. If you want, you could also talk about fantasy baseball. You could ask a question, talk trades, break down a player debates, or you could have talents and you could do something that's relevant to the show. Whatever. Make the show better. It's your opportunity if you want to take it. Not a ton of you wanted to take it, but just enough to make it relevant today and a couple new names in the basket. So, Bogman, are you ready to get to some voicemails?
Let's do it.
It's our boy Elmo back in. Uh-oh. I don't know if it's going to be Elmo voice. Are we going to immediately cancel this? We'll see.
Adam. This is not Elmo.
Well, no, it says Elmo voicemail, but this is, it's our boy Adam. We haven't heard from Adam in a little bit. What's up, brother? What do you got?
Hey, guys. It's Elmo. 2:30 in the morning, Monday.
Love it.
I figured I'd give you guys a call.
Is he calling from, like,
the space payphone from 1987? That is calling, he's calling from
the Mars rover. He is calling from that payphone that we saw at Chase Field. 100%. I don't think we've had anybody actually call from a payphone. It's usually using your phone to record. This is awesome. All right. This is my favorite voicemail of all time. What do you got, Adam?
I'm driving to work. Yeah, that's right. 2:30 a.m.
Ooh.
Okay, question. 14 team, head-to-head. I just got Tristan McKenzie of the Indians back. Yep, Indians, not Guardians. Ooh. Never going to say Guardians. Guardians, nope. Indians, always Indians.
Okay.
All right. Indians.
Okay.
Anyway, rant over. Just got Tristan McKenzie back. Who am I dropping? I want to drop Noah Syndergaard, but he's a Dodger.
No, you're fine.
For a lot of wins if he ever pulls his head out of his...
Drop.
You know what?
Nope.
I don't.
Or do I drop Pittsburgh's Johan Avio? I hope I said that right. Avio's been a lot better. Syndergaard sucks. But again, Dodgers, Pirates, that's probably the only reason I'm considering this. What do you guys think? Thanks. Love you guys. Hope the family and animals are great. Bye.
Thank you.
Great.
They're not. They're all dying at my house. They're all dying at my house, but... Well, I mean, we've had 3 in the last 3 months, so it's not good.
Thank you
for the kind wishes.
I mean, we had everything in this. We had payphone from 1987, which is great. 2:30 a.m. We had a rant in there. Welsh and I may or may not agree with that, disagree with that, however you take it.
I don't care. You know what? I don't care. If you want to, if it was Indians to you, whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't make
any sense. Not my business.
And then a good question, too, is Syndergaard. Cindy is terrible.
Oh, like, he's the worst. He's 100% cuttable.
He bounced out of that rotation.
Does he pitch tonight? Like, he's going to, this is it.
Things are
getting jiggled. They're going to get jiggled all over the place tonight. Syndergaard, you just see that they're like, yeah, Syndergaard will probably make his next start.
Against the white hot Reds in Cincinnati. So.
Good buzz. No, thank you. I'm good. Noah Syndergaard, you don't have to think twice about. He can go. He can go the way of your Guardians and how you treat them. So what do you think Adam does at 2:30 in the morning? Nothing good. Nothing good happens at 2:30.
Well, I mean, he could be delivering the newspaper. He could be making the donuts. He'd be first to get to the construction site.
I would say it sounds very construction, like get in at like 3 a.m, get done at like 9 a.m. type of thing.
Yeah. Is that how that works? There's all kinds of stuff. People function at different hours. You know me.
I remember
like you slept till 9:30. Oh my God. Oh yeah. We have different schedules to work on, you and me. Very different. Yes. Lazy person, sleep till 9. You know, it's the same thing. I hate it when people are like, you're going to bed at 10. What are you doing? It's like, yeah, I work on a different schedule than you.
It actually is funny because I've become more of a night owl, and like I'll like respond to because I'm working with all these other places, and I'll have someone like, you know, like Nando Athletic being like, what are you doing this stuff at 1 a.m. I'm like, just when I'm doing stuff, I'm just finishing up things.
When am I supposed to do it, guy?
Yeah, come on, doing it's 1 a.m. late, so come on. Yeah, you know, I remember when I was younger, there was like especially when you first get into like the workforce, you know, the only jobs you can get are the worst, and then you realize like, I'm not trying to be rude, but like, you know, like fast food joints are like rough to deal with when you're younger and stuff. And then you're like, what else can I do? And then you come across like paper routes and you're like, oh, this could be easy money. But then you realize you have to be up every day at like 4 a.m. and you have to do that. And what a nightmare that sounded like, unless that's on your schedule. So I'm going to pretend Adam delivers papers to important people.
Yeah, I think
so. Or he's like construction.
People. Yeah. Only the richest people's newspapers. That's what it is. He's delivering the New York Times in Montgomery, Alabama, or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. But it's probably like, maybe he's like, he's like, go do this. Go build that thing. Go build this thing. You do it at 3 a.m. That's what I'm going to pretend. Thank you, Adam. We love you, brother. Thank you for the well wishes as well. Nick, we've got Nick up in the house saying thank you for all your efforts. We appreciate that. This is a video. No, I didn't realize it until just now. All right. So, is Nick our no eye contact?
I don't know. No, I'm just making that up.
I love no eye contact.
I just think those are so funny. Let's see it.
Here we go. All right, Nick. Yep.
Hi, guys. 12 team, 5x5 roto with daily lineups. I'm in fourth place overall in the saves category. I'm way ahead. I have 57 saves. Next closest guy is at 32. Third place is 30.
Oh, yeah. We can see it. By the way, Nick is doing like the Lord's work here. He is showing us his entire screen, too, so we can see his CBS screen. Yeah, it is. And he is demolishing in sales.
So my current closers are Emmanuel Classe, Kenley Jensen, Alex Lang, and David Robertson. My questions are, is Classe the one to trade because he's the one who will get the most value? Number two is right now the right time to trade them? And number three is what are some starting pitcher names to target? If I do trade Class A, I could use help in the strikeout and wins category. Excellent. Thank you, guys.
Welcome, buddy. A little bit further on him. We also can see his job. We won't out him, but I can see where he works. So very important person, too. That's an interesting thing because this being roto and what you've accumulated, I would usually be like, don't trade Class A, but he's so far ahead that like Jansen and Robertson alone can kind of
make a move
in the category.
If you're not in first, that's the thing. Like you're not in first place in a roto and you're so far ahead in this category, trade from the depth. You have built yourself this lead. This is absolutely the time to trade.
I would usually say no.
The time to trade Class A too, right?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I would usually say no on trading Class A, but this scenario, yeah, I think you can do it. So what pitchers do you go after? Especially if you're trying to get strikeouts in here. I feel like there's a couple different paths. I feel like you could go and get maybe two pieces, and maybe it's both are middle to high, or you can get the one high, the one low. Who came out of my mind was Logan Gilbert. It's not a one for one, so you'd have to get another piece. Logan Gilbert would be one I would focus on. I feel like Luis Castillo could be a one for one.
That's a good one too. I'm wondering about, what do you think, Welsh, about maybe like an overachiever, like one big overachiever? Like, do you think you could get Eovaldi for Class A? Would you even do that?
Oh no! I mean, we're valuing Eovaldi. Like, you could get, you should be able, you should go Eovaldi and more.
He's the best pitcher in baseball right now, according to Yahoo. He's their number one pitcher. Like, what about Joe Ryan? Like,
Joe Ryan's an interesting one. Like, I don't know how you do the pairings, but like Joe Ryan and like a Mitch Keller or something for Claude. That might be too much, but that's the type of like spot I'd be working at. Maybe you could underbuy Aaron Nola. Aaron Nola is starting to pick it back up. Maybe that's a one for one. I feel like I'd love to do
like an underachiever or something. Or an overachiever, right? Like
an old priest and a young priest.
Yeah, I need an old priest and a young priest. Yeah, maybe do one of those. Maybe get someone who's performing over the top and someone that's, you know, dragging down right now.
A couple of my recent trade guys.
Two for one. Yeah.
I like Hunter Brown and Merrill Kelly, but those would have to have differing extra pieces in them. I guess the bottom line is here, if you're trading Class A, you're trading a top tier closer, you should be able to dip into the pools of like maybe Luis Castillo's at the tippy top, Eovaldi, Joe Ryan. You're not going to get like the Gossmans and the Gallons. And if you're wanting a second piece, that might be relative to like, okay, maybe you focus on Hunter Brown and something, or, you know, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of flexibility, but I think I'd do it. I think you can do it, Nick. And I think this is a good spot you've put yourself into. So I got to remember, Nick always does the video, and I love when Nick sends us voicemails, because I love that he doesn't look at us, but he's all business. And I know he wants to look at us, but he's looking at his screen. So
yeah, he's doing the work.
Thank you, Nick.
Doing the work.
Nick, you're a great listener. You're a good person too. You're just a good person. Okay. I assume you're a good person. You actually might eat people, but I don't know any of that. I assume you don't, but I'm going to project.
From the football pod, just high five.
And hey, Armie Hammer. Do you know there's a documentary on Armie Hammer about like why he's into eating people? I haven't watched it, but now I'm interested.
That's too dark for me. Like, I'll watch the cult stuff, and there's dark stuff that happens in there, but I'm not watching the cannibal stuff. I can't
do it. You hate, you just don't like dark stuff. I always forget that. Like,
the world is dark enough. I don't need a whole, you know, I get it. He was a cannibal. I don't need to hear the details. It's fine.
Yeah. I think I'm just interested in the aspects of life. And sometimes it makes me feel better where you're like, I don't want to see that. Like, don't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I feel like life is bad enough. I don't need extra stuff. I don't need my fun entertainment time also filled with bad stuff. Fair so I'll go down that rabbit hole every once in a while. I told you, I just watched that.
Hey, Bogman doesn't want to see people get eaten. That's fine. It's totally fine. You know what? That's your line. Eating people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aaron with a Luis Arraez question. So let's see. I was very boisterous earlier about me being right, but maybe I'm wrong about something. What you got, Aaron?
This is Aaron from Wisconsin calling back. I just wanted to discuss Luis Arraez after your last podcast.
Uh-oh.
The guy has 29 RBIs, 22 runs scored, and a 945 OPS, which is leading my team in my 12-team Roto League. I don't know what I'm missing. You guys said he might be only the one category player for me, OPS, but he still scores enough runs. He gets enough RBIs, and he's leading my team in OPS right now, even though he doesn't hit for power. I feel like I have the steal of the century. I picked the guy at pick 200 in my draft this year.
But this is an OPS league, right? Because you keep focusing on OPS.
Yeah, but switch it out. Make it batting average. And it's the same. Like, the advantage is the same. So okay. I understand what he's saying.
Okay, let's keep going.
It's been amazing. Maybe I'm just naive and I'm only seeing the value in him, but I feel like he's awesome.
He is awesome.
He's a great player.
I try to, and I know I do this, and I don't know if it annoys people sometimes, and I know so many other people don't do this. I contextualize so much, and if it annoys you, I actually don't care, but I always want to do it because it's like, when I say something and I'm like, hey, I'm out on this guy, it doesn't mean that guy's trash. If I'm like, I want to trade this guy, it doesn't mean this. And I know, I guess I'm being more negative about it. If that is boosting your team, that's great. But what I get stuck in is like where people are like, we're not talking enough about him. He is a two category player. The RBIs, it's garbage. He's 60 RBIs. That's nothing. You can pick that. You can stream that. You can triple that, or yes, not triple that, but you can get 30 more RBIs streaming off the wire. So yes, what are we really talking about? Absolutely dominant at one position, but it is the bottom of the barrel position.
He sets you back.
And he's good in the second position of runs. He's not elite. He's good. So those two things, he is a steal, but he absolutely is a tank in homers. He does nothing in stolen base. He actually hurts you because of what he doesn't get you in homers. Stolen bases are nothing, and RBI is crap.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome in this league.
I love you.
Ready to party!
So fun. You know what? That's your line. Eating people.
Yeah.
Aaron with a Luis Arraez question. So let's see.
I was one.
Very boisterous earlier about me being right, but maybe I'm wrong about something. What you got, Aaron?
This is Aaron from Wisconsin calling back. I just wanted to discuss Luis Arraez after your last podcast.
Uh-oh.
The guy has 29 RBIs, 22 runs scored, and a 945 OPS, which is leading my team in my 12-team Roto League. I don't know what I'm missing. You guys said he might be only the one category player for me, OPS, but he still scores enough runs, he gets enough RBIs, and he's leading my team in OPS right now, even though he doesn't hit for power. I feel like I have the steal of the century. I picked the guy at pick 200 in my draft this year.
But this is an OPS league, right? Because you keep focusing on OPS.
Yeah, but so I mean, but switch it out. Make it batting average. And it's the same. Like, the advantage is the same. So okay. I understand what he's saying.
Okay, let's keep going.
It's been amazing. Maybe I'm just naive and I'm only seeing the value in him, but I feel like he's awesome.
He is awesome. He's a great player. I contextualize so much, and if it annoys you, I actually don't care, but I always want to do it because it's like, when I say something and I'm like, hey, I'm out on this guy, it doesn't mean that guy's trash. If I'm like, I want to trade this guy, it doesn't mean this. And I know, I guess I'm being more negative about it. If that is boosting your team, that's great. But what I get stuck in is like where people are like, we're not talking enough about him. He is a two category player. The RBIs, it's garbage. He's 60 RBIs. That's nothing. You can pick that. You can stream that. You can triple that, or not triple that, but you can get 30 more RBIs streaming off the wire. So what are we really talking about? Absolutely dominant at one position, but it is the bottom of the barrel position.
He sets you back.
And he's good in the second position of runs. He's not elite. He's good. So those two things, he is a steal, but he absolutely is a tank in homers. He does nothing in stolen base. He actually hurts you because of what he doesn't get you in homers. Stolen bases are nothing, and RBI is crap.